It is an extraordinary thing to know that there is not a lot left to say. Because today, there is a community of people who have articulated the experience of what it means to be a woman, what it means to be turned into pornography, what it means to be bought and sold, what it means to be treated with hate and then called speech, treated with hate and then called sex. For 20 years, people that you know and people that you don't know inside the women's movement have been trying to communicate something very simple. Pornography happens. It happens. Lawyers, call it what you want. Call it speech, call it act, call it conduct. We called it a practice when we tried to describe it in the ordinance, but it happens. It happens to women. It happens in real life. Women's lives are made two-dimensional and dead. We are flattened on the page or on the screen. Our vaginal lips are painted purple for the consumer to clue him in as to where to point his attention. Our rectums are highlighted so that he knows where to push. Our mouths are used and our throats are used for deep penetration. This is the crime of dehumanization. We're not talking about violence yet. We're nowhere near violence. This is what it means to be dehumanized. It's a real thing. It happens in real life. It happens to people. It has happened to us, to women. We say that women are objectified. We hope that people will think that we're very smart when we use a long word. But being turned into an object is a real thing, and this is a particular kind of object. This is a target. This is that you are turned into a target. And red or purple marks the spot where he's supposed to get you. The object wants it. She is the only object with a will that says, hurt me. A car doesn't say, bang me up. But she, this non-human thing, says, hurt me. And the more you hurt me, the more that I like it. And when we look at her, that purple painted thing, when we look at her vagina, when we look at her rectum, when we look at her mouth, when we look at her throat, those of us who know her, and those of us who have been her, still can barely remember that she's a human being. Barely. And so in pornography we see that the will of women is expressed through these concrete scenarios of the ways in which women's bodies are used. And so we see the object wants to be penetrated. And so there is this motif in pornography of self-penetration, where a woman takes something and she sticks it up herself. And so you have pornography in which there are pregnant women. And for some reason, they take usually hoses. And they stick the hoses up themselves. This is not a human being. One cannot look at this photograph and say, there is a human being. She has rights. She has freedom. She has dignity. She is someone. One cannot. And that is what pornography does to women. We talk about fetishism in sex. Psychologists have always made that mean, for instance, a man who ejaculates to a shoe on a table. But in fact, that's what happens to a woman's body. She's turned into a sexual fetish. And he ejaculates on her, And in pornography, he ejaculates on her. It is a convention of pornography that the sperm is on her, not in her. It marks the spot, what he owns and how he owns it. It's a way of saying she's contaminated with his dirt and she is dirty. Pornographers use every attribute that a woman has. They sexualize it. They find a way to dehumanize it. And they sell it. And they sell it to men who get off on it. And this happens in concrete ways, so that in pornography, the skin of black women is taken to be like a sexual organ. And the skin itself is the fetish. It is the charmed object. It is the place where the violation is acted out. Now, the way that this works is concrete and specific. It is not abstract and conceptual. And that is why all these debates about the subject of pornography have such a bizarre quality to them. Because we're talking about women's real lives and things that really happen to real women all the time. The women in the pornography and the women on whom the pornography is used. And yet, we live in a world where we're told that this is really about ideas. Well, a rectum doesn't have an idea. And a vagina doesn't have an idea. And the mouths of women do not express ideas. And when a woman has a penis down to the bottom of her throat, as in the film Deep Throat, and there is no violence, that throat is not part of a human being who is involved in discussing ideas. No. We're talking now about pornography without more violence. We're talking about the cruelty of dehumanizing someone who has a right to more. In pornography, everything means something. I've talked to you about the skin of black women. The skin of white women has a meaning in pornography. In a white supremacist society, the skin of white women is supposed to indicate privilege. And so what does it mean that pornography is filled with white women? It means that when you take a woman who is at the zenith of the hierarchy in racial terms and you ask her, what do you want? She, who supposedly has some freedom and some choices, I want to be used. Use me, hurt me, exploit me. That is what I want. And then we are told that she is a standard of beauty, a standard of womanhood, but in fact, she's a standard of compliance. She's a standard of submission. She's a standard of oppression, which is to say she does what she needs to do in order to stay alive. And her white skin is something that some men like to ejaculate on. She is for sale. And so what is her white skin worth? It means that her price is a little bit higher. When we talk about objectifying pornography, we're talking about the sexualization of insult, of humiliation, and we are talking about the sexualization of cruelty. And this is what I want to say to you, that there is cruelty that does not have in it overt violence. That there is cruelty that says to you, you are worth nothing. There is cruelty that says you exist in order for him to wipe his penis on you. That's who you are. That's what you're for. That's cruelty. Dehumanizing someone is cruel. And it doesn't have to be violent. in order for it to be cruel. I am struck by how, when things are done to women that would be construed to be violence if they were done in another context, man to man or to a man, people always act as if it's bad, but it's okay. It's bad, but it's all right. We don't like it, but hey, that's the way things are. And it occurs to me that we have to deal here with the impact of orgasm on our perceptions of what hatred is and is not. Men use sex to hurt us. There is some argument that in order for men to have sexual pleasure with women, the inferior creatures, we have to be completely dehumanized, which means controlled, which means less than them. I am struck by how hate speech, racist hate speech, becomes, as it becomes more virulent, it becomes more and more explicitly sexual. So that by the time you get up to Hitler's ascendancy to power in Weimar, you are looking at anti-Semitic hate speech that is indistinguishable from pornography. What does that orgasm do? That orgasm says, I am real. And that thing is not. And if the annihilation of that thing brings me pleasure, that's the way life should be. There is a sense of biological inevitability. We wonder, how is it that people believe these bizarre philosophies of biological superiority? Well, one answer is that when they are manifest in such a way that they give people sexual pleasure, they seem to be biologically inevitable. They seem to be natural. And people say, well, it's simply true. It's simply true that if I have an orgasm from hurting you, it must be the right thing for me to do. And you must have a nature that is appropriate to this relationship that we now have, which is you're nothing and I'm someone. And being someone means I have the power, the social power, the economic power, and the recognition of being human. In all of this, sadism is a dynamic. In every expression of hate speech, in every use of a racial epithet, there is a desire to hurt. There is an underlying dimension of pushing someone down, subordinating them, making them less. When that hate speech becomes fully sexualized, as in the systematic reality of the pornography industry, and a whole class of people exists in order to provide both sexual pleasure and a synonymous sense of superiority to a certain class of people, in this case men, when that happens, we dare not tolerate that being called freedom. The problem for women is that being hurt is ordinary. It happens every day. It happens all the time. It happens in every neighborhood, on every street. Women are being hurt. We count ourselves lucky when we're only being humiliated and insulted. We count ourselves goddamn lucky. When whatever it is falls short of rape. Those who have been beaten in marriages also have a sense of what luck is. We're always happy when something less bad happens than what we had thought possible. And we tell ourselves that if we don't settle for the less bad, there's something wrong with us. Now it is time for us to stop that. When you think about women's ordinary lives and the lives of children, especially female children, it is very hard not to think that you are looking at atrocity. And what we have to accept here is that what we are looking at is ordinary life. It is happening. It is systematic. It is real. It is intended. It is not an accident. Now, pornography is part of it. And what I would like you especially to think about are these things. Number one, pornographers use our bodies as language. Anything they say, they have to use us to say. They do not have that right. Number two, constitutionally protecting pornography as speech means that there is a new way in which women are chattel. Constitutionally protected, as we have been, chattel. For over 200 years. We belong to the pimps who want to use us to say something. And the Constitution is on their side, not on ours. This is not new. Not really. It is abhorrent. It is intolerable. It is not our Constitution, unless it works for us. Number three, pornography uses those in the United States who were left out of the Constitution. Pornography uses white women who were chattel, uses African American women who were slaves. Pornography uses men. It uses African American men, usually as rapists who were slaves. Pornography is not made up of old white men. It isn't. Nobody comes on them. They are the ones who are doing it. They are the ones who are profiting from it. They do benefit from it. And we do have to stop them. Think about how marriage controlled women, how women were property under law, chattel, property to men, until the beginning of the 20th century. Think about the control the church had over women. Think about what a fucking resistance has been going on and all the trouble you have made for these men who took for granted that you belonged to them. And think about pornography as a new institution of social control, a democratic use of terrorism against all women, a way of saying publicly to every woman who walks down the street, avert your eyes, a sign of second-class citizenship, look down, bitch, because when you look up, what are you going to see? You're going to see a picture of yourself being hung. That is what you're going to see. You're going to see your legs spread open. That's what you're going to see. Now, pornography tells us that the will of women is to be used. And I just want to say that the anti-pornography ordinance that we developed in Minneapolis, and please note the twin cityness of Minneapolis and St. Paul, this means that there are some serious pornographers in Minneapolis and some serious racists in St. Paul and some serious people in both cities who want the pornography and the racism to stop. All right? And the ordinance that Catherine McKinnon and I worked on came out of that culture, a culture, a political culture that did not want to tolerate this kind of cruelty towards people. We were asked by a group in a neighborhood to come and testify at a local zoning committee meeting. A group of African Americans and poor white people who had pornography zoned into their neighborhood. And for 7 years, they had been fighting these zoning laws with the pornography destroying their neighborhoods. And they came to us and they said, "We now know that the issue here is woman-hating." That is virtually a direct quote. "We know it's woman-hating, and we want to do something about it. What can we do?" And the city of Minneapolis was organized on a grassroots level to pass this civil rights bill because it's fair, because it's honest, and because it's on the side of those who have been disenfranchised and oppressed. And it changes the expression of the will of women. It takes it away from the control of the pornographers. And using the ordinance, women get to say, "We are not your colony. You do not own us as if we're territory. My will, as expressed through the use of this ordinance, is I don't want it. I don't like it. Pain hurts. Coercion isn't sexy. I reject subordination. I resist being someone else's speech. I speak. I am going into court and I speak." We wanted a law that repudiates what happens to women when pornography happens to women. Now, one of the problems with the law is, I have a character in Mercy express it, that you have to be clean to go before the law. You can't go before the law unless you're clean. Now, no women are clean. That's what we find out every time we try to prosecute a rape case. We're not clean. But certainly the women who have been turned into pornography are not clean. And certainly the women being sold on the street corners are not clean. And certainly the women who are being battered and pornographized in their homes are not clean. We created a law that can be used by a woman who is not clean. When a woman uses this ordinance, if a woman ever gets a chance to use this ordinance, she will be saying, "I am someone, therefore I resist." When the Minneapolis City Council passed the ordinance, they said, "Women are someone. Women matter. Women want to fight back. We will give them what they want. That's what they want." The woman using the ordinance will be saying, "I am someone who has endured. I have survived. I matter. I know a lot. And what I know matters. It matters, and it's going to matter here in court, you pimp, because I am going to use what I know against you. And you, Mr. Consumer, I know about you, and I am going to use what I know, even about you, even when you're my teacher, when you're my father, when you're my lawyer, when you're my doctor, when you're my brother. I am going to use what I know." It was not a surprise to Catherine McKinnon and myself when, after the ordinance was passed, the newspaper said, "Aha, it was a right-wing fundamentalist achievement." Because they were saying to us, you're no one. You don't exist, women. Couldn't have been your idea. And it wasn't a surprise to us when people believed it. We didn't like it, but it wasn't a surprise. And when the court said to the injured women who wanted to use the ordinance, when they said, you're no one, the pimp is someone, he matters, we're going to protect him, it wasn't a surprise. And when the court said the consumer is someone, you're no one, you whom he hurt, you're no one, but he's someone. We're here for him. That wasn't a surprise. And when the court said that when you assert your injury, you are in fact basically expressing an opinion, a point of view, you are basically suggesting something that we can all then go and debate in the famous marketplace of ideas. That rape, that beating, that kidnapping, you have a viewpoint about it. It itself does not matter. Its relationship to the pornography, which we grant you, doesn't matter. Because we have a viewpoint. And our viewpoint just so happens to be the same as the pornographer's viewpoint. And the pornographer's viewpoint is that you are not worth anything except what we pay for you in that famous free marketplace where we take your actual corporeal reality to be an idea. We wrote the ordinance for the women who had been raped and who had been prostituted in and because of pornography. They wanted to say, I am someone and I'm going to win. We are part of them. We have lived lives as women. We are not exempt or separate from any of this. We wrote the ordinance in behalf of our own lives as well. I want to ask you, to make certain that women will have a right and a chance to go into an American court of law and say, this is what the pornographers did to me. I am someone. I resist it, I reject it, and I am going to win. You have to make that possible. It has been 10 years. It has been 10 years. Count the number of women who have been hurt in those 10 years. Count how many of us have been lucky to be only insulted and humiliated. Count. We can't wait another 10 years. We need you now. Please organize. Help. Thank you.